It's been one of those weeks, am I right? I'm Jessica Marshall. Welcome to The Eagle, a Times Union podcast. Here's a little recap of our trending stories. It started off with an unexpectedly icy snowstorm that knocked many of us offline. About 87,000 National Grid customers around the region lost power Saturday and Sunday. Everything's back online, thankfully, but it wasn't what anyone wanted during the first week of spring. Here's hoping that that was the last gasp of winter. In other news, it looks like we might not have an on-time state budget this year. Lawmakers say they're expecting talks to stretch into next week. There's also a weird smell in North Albany, and no one can figure out where it's coming from. What else is trending on TimesUnion.com? Well, we know for sure that NCAA basketball star Caitlin Clark is headed to Albany this weekend for a Sweet 16 and very possibly Elite 8 matchup. The MVP Arena is hosting the women's tourney matches this weekend, and city officials are preparing for what they expect to be massive crowds downtown. And to round out our recap, mayhem erupted when Stony Brook students confessed to stuffing the ballot boxes in favor of their mascot in the annual State University of New York Mascot Madness competition. Their mascot, Wolfie Seawolf, has been withdrawn from the competition as a result. Very scandalous. All right, let's get on with our episode with a little old-time string band music.
So rock me, mama, like a wagon wheel. Rock me, mama, any way you feel.
Old Crow Medicine Show is a two-time Grammy-winning American string band. They got their start busking on the streets of Nashville in the late 90s, and they've been rocking ever since with hits like Wagon Wheel and Sweet Amarillo.
If you've got the soul, let it roll. If you've got the time, let it shine. If you've got the dream, set it free, just like Jubilee.
Their newest album, Jubilee, was nominated for another Grammy this year in the Best Folk Music category, and they were alongside the likes of legends like Joni Mitchell, Paul Simon, and Rufus Wainwright, among many others. The seven-member band is coming to the Ulster Performing Arts Center in Kingston on April 14th, and I am thrilled to say that bassist Morgan Janik joins us now on The Eagle.
Keep the fire inside, from the coal fields to the textile mills, digging for the pocket change.
How are you?
I'm all right. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you so much for agreeing to do this. I was very excited to talk to you.
I'm glad. Thanks for having me.
Have you ever been up to the Hudson Valley in upstate New York area?
Oh, definitely. In fact, we have played the egg.
That's right. Okay.
Hatched from the egg.
So. Everybody remembers that one for various reasons.
Yes. And it's been a while since we've been back up to the Hudson Valley.
Sure. Well, everybody's excited that you're coming. So I did a little research on you. I am a sucker for a good origin story, and I think you have a really good one, at least with relation to Old Crow Medicine Show. So do you mind indulging me with your origin story?
Oh, not at all. I grew up in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and then my folks and our family moved down to just outside of Atlanta for 2 years, and I finished high school down there, and then I went for 2 years to Manhattan to NYU, left NYU, and came back to Tennessee in 99. And I was going to school with a buddy of mine, Sam, and, you know, we were poor college dropouts in a tech school, and so my dad had come up to take us out to lunch. We were going, there used to be this great Irish pub on 2nd Avenue in Nashville. It's closed down now. It's been closed down for years. But basically across the street from that was the Wild Horse Saloon. And right in front of that was this band playing on the street corner. It was something I'd never heard anything like it. And the crowd was pouring out into the street and I was absolutely transfixed. And, you know, finally, I think, you know, I put a dollar in the tip jar and I went and, you know, and had lunch, but I, you know, definitely didn't forget them. They were gone by the time we came out. And then I saw them again, you know, I saw them again on the street corner because they were doing that a lot. And then, you know, I talked to them a couple of times, but was mostly just a big fan. And then I guess I had sent an email at one point because I was at my job at the time, and I get a call from Willie Watson saying, "Hey man, I got an email from you saying that you play bass. We have a gig on Thursday and we have no bass player. Do you think you could do it?" You know, I've been playing bass my whole life. And I was in another band, Colonel J.D. Wilkes and the Legendary Shack Shakers at the time.
Love the name.
You know, I said, "Yeah, I can, you know, I'm sure I could swing it. I'd love to play with you guys. You know, when's the gig?" "Well, it's this Thursday. It's at 8 a.m. 8 a.m.? What is it?" "Well, it's, you know, it's for the 75th anniversary of the, it's either the Grand Ole Opry or the Ryman Auditorium. I can't remember which one it was."
Oh my gosh, that's not like a small gig.
No, but it was at the Ryman. It was a radio gig. It was, you know, so it was there was no live audience. It was a radio gig on the stage of the Ryman Auditorium. And that was my very first show with Old Crow Medicine Show back in 2000, 2001.
Wow.
You know, that job went away, the other band went away, and that's been history.
Long story short, you have two Grammys now. but before we get to that, I do want to go back and ask you, tell me, so you said you've been playing bass your whole life. Did you play the big stand-up bass or electric?
I say my whole life. It's been a long time. I think in the grand scheme of things, came to playing bass a little bit later. I started playing tenor sax at, you know, when I was in seventh or eighth grade, I think. I think it was my sophomore year of high school, so I would have been, you know, 15 years old. And I've been playing a little bit of electric bass for a couple of years at that point. And then the guy who was playing upright, the big one, was graduating. And they needed somebody to step in and start playing upright, and so I did. And so I've been playing upright, yeah, since I was 15. I'm now 45. So yeah, most of my life.
That's great. I always wondered, like, just how did you log around this giant bass as a teenager?
Oh yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I don't think you choose it due to its convenience.
You choose it for the sound. Now, you guys have had a pretty epic 25 years. I kind of want to focus on where you are now. Like, how is your music today? Like, would you describe it in the same way that you would have described it, you know, 20, 25 years ago?
I think the through line has always been that we've been playing American folk music or American music. And it might be, you know, old time, it might be bluegrass, it might be folk or blues or country or conjunto or Cajun. You know, there's all kinds of expression of traditional American music. And we've always done that. I think that, you know, whether it was the five of us on a street corner or, you know, these days the seven of us in an arena, like, that's still the same. That's never changed. But now I think that, you know, we have more tools at our disposal. We've been doing it for 25 years. And so we realize that we don't have to be confined by just what, you know, the acoustic string band that we were for many years. You know, it wasn't until we did Tennessee Pusher in LA with Don Was, and we had the great Jim Keltner come out and play drums. First time having a drummer on the full record, and having Benmont Tench from the Heartbreakers come play organ. First time we ever had keys on a record. You know, we did that, and it was like, oh, well, that's us too. And so every time we did something, we added something, it was always sort of like, oh, well, that's us too. And so, you know, we might play, you know, the old agrarian folk song, or we might play, you know, Texas Hold'em by Beyonce. Like, it's still, you know, it's still us doing us. As long as we're having fun with it, then it's Old Crow.
Right. That's what I was thinking. It sounds like you guys have a lot of fun.
We're in the fun business.
You're in the fun business. I love that. Do you ever still go out and busk just for fun?
Not these days. No. You know, that like kind of mentioned, that upright bass is pretty freaking heavy. And it's a long way from parking in Nashville, as you well know.
Yeah.
You might remember. You know, I think that there are times where we might be in a town and, you know, there's something historic that we can go honor by going and playing in front of it. But as far as just go whooping it up for 8 hours on, you know, on the pavement, I don't know that those days are in front of us.
So you guys just got nominated for a Grammy not that long ago. Tell me about that. How does that feel?
You know, it always feels awesome to get nominated for a Grammy. I think there's always the thought that there's a correlation between, like, intent and outcome. When we made Paint This Town, which was the first record that we made in our new studio that we're here, you know, we're here in. We spent a lot of time working on that record and, you know, developing the kind of sound. We had, you know, new band members, and it was all, you know, it was all hands on deck, and it was a really intense process. And we really thought, oh, we got, you know, we got the songs here, and everything's great, and the label was behind it, management was behind it, everybody was really excited about it. You know, we hadn't been nominated for a Grammy in a little while, and we're like, oh man, this is going to be the one. We got, you know, we got this in the bag. Of course, nominations come and go, and that didn't happen. And I want to say the following February, we were just so amped up from making that record. We're like, let's just go ahead and do another one. And so we recorded it less than 6 months after we recorded Paint This Town. But it was done in a way that was more like, oh, you know, we just want to keep recording. We want to do some more stuff. And so the intention was there in a different way. The intention was to just make some more songs happen. You know, we were still proud of all the songs. We still spent time on it. But I think that, like, the focus happened in a different way. Mm-hmm. And so when it got nominated, it was like, oh, my God, like, you know, maybe you don't have to just go nose to the grindstone all the time. Jeez, like, go do the fun record instead. And that's what people are going to want to listen to. God, the category we were in, the caliber of people in that category, you know, to be on that same list, you know, with Joni Mitchell and with, you know, Paul Simon, you know, to be in the, you know, in the same little tiny pond as those people, it's like the people that everybody's elevating, like, you're just like, yeah, great. I'm so flattered. And so.
Yeah. Oh, that's really rewarding. That's great. Congratulations on the nomination. That's really.
Thank you.
Did the nomination and, you know, sort of the thrill and the fun and the kind of effortless feel that you made that album with, I mean, is that, are you guys going to keep going, you know, to the extent that you could talk about it? Do you have more plans?
You know, I think every time we go in the studio, especially now, because we talk about, you know, I talk about we're in the fun business, and I didn't invent that. That was I can't remember who that's a quote from. Corey Ants could tell you. But, you know, it's the sort of thing, we're in the fun business, if you're not having fun, then you're not doing your job. But that has to also carry over to the music that you're making, you know, because a quarter century of making music with this band, you know, with different people throughout the years. But I think every time we go in, we look a little bit like, you know, what else can we do? What's another thing that we can try? We're still a, you know, Ketch will always say, we're just an old time string band. We're still fiddles and banjos. There's only so far that you can, you know, push out on the boundaries before they break, but we're really stressing the cracks here. So we're always looking at new ways of, you know, storytelling and songwriting and arranging and recording. And, you know, we can all stand around in one microphone and make a record. We've done it. What are the other ways we can do it?
What can you tell us about the show that you have coming up in Ulster County? What can you tell the audience that they can look forward to?
Not wanting to sit down. It is always a high energy show. It's always an entertaining show. I think that's an important distinction. I think a lot of times between different live musicians is that there are performers and there are entertainers. If you've ever been to a concert, I'm sure you have, where it's, I mean, like, you go and you're there live and it sounds like the record. I can go put the record on.
Right.
You know, I want to see something else. I want to see something exciting. I want to see something played in a way that it's not the way that I necessarily know it, but it's still familiar enough that I can latch onto it. So you'll hear music from all aspects of our, you know, from 25 years of Old Crow. You'll laugh, I hope. You'll cry, I hope. You'll buy drinks and tip your waitresses, I hope.
Rock me, mama, like the wind and the rain. Rock me, mama, like a southbound train. Hey, mama, rock me.
Old Crow Medicine Show will be at the Ulster Performing Arts Center in Kingston on April 14th. We are going to take a short break now, but when we come back, we'll talk to an astronomer about the best way to watch the coming eclipse. Stay tuned.
If you're enjoying this podcast, take advantage of all the Times Union has to offer and support our efforts to bring you award-winning journalism by becoming a Times Union subscriber today. Go to timesunion.com/subscribe.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Eagle, a Times Union podcast. I'm Jessica Marshall. On Monday, April 8th, North America will witness a solar eclipse. And fortunately for us here in upstate New York, we will either be in or close to the path of totality, which, according to Siena College astronomer Dr. Mindy Townsend, might be a once-in-a-lifetime thing. Professor Townsend joins me now to talk more about the coming eclipse and how you can see it.
So I guess I wanted to start with the science. I think a lot of us learn about it when we're in, you know, maybe elementary or middle school. And certainly there's lots going on, you know, for the kids around the region to watch this eclipse. But can you kind of explain the science behind it? Like, what are we watching when we're watching an eclipse?
I like to think of this as like we're actually watching like this dance that happens all the time in the sky of how the moon and the earth kind of move through space around the sun. Because when we have a solar eclipse like this, what happens is that the moon's orbit kind of hits just the right spot at just the right time to completely block out the sun. And the moon is going around us all the time, but it's only really a couple times a year that it's in just the right phase and just the right spot to actually block out the sun.
This particular eclipse for us in the United States, in upstate New York, like, it's total, right? You know, it's one of those eclipses that comes around maybe less often than your typical eclipse.
They are rare in that they happen, I think, on average every 18 months. We'll often get a couple a year. What's amazing about totality is that there's really only a comparatively thin path across, you know, whatever landmass the shadow's actually going over that you can actually see the total eclipse. I think the entire continent, like North America, will see some sort of eclipse, but just this like 100-mile wide path is where you can see like a total eclipse. And that is why thousands and thousands of people kind of flock to this teeny tiny, teeny tiny little area.
Has this type of totality happened here before? Like, I'm talking about like the swath of upstate New York that is going to be in that path.
I am told that the last total eclipse to hit New York State was actually 99 years ago. So it's been quite a while.
I was around back then. I don't know about you.
I mean, the next one to hit New York State is not till 2079. So we have like 55 more years before New York sees this again. So I'm really hoping that people take the time to fight the traffic and actually go to totality, because a partial eclipse is really cool, but totality is really kind of something different.
Of course, it being cloudy, that could happen, right? So we could all miss it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's always a risk. People who are new to astronomy worry very much about that. I have to say, astronomers are really used to this. We've all had several nights of observing kind of washed out because of clouds. But yeah, clouds are always a risk, which is almost one of those things that makes, like, if you can actually see it, it's like, yes, everything worked out. We had perfect alignment of the sun, moon, and earth, and the atmosphere cooperated. So it's perfect. Steel yourself for some disappointment, but remain hopeful.
Absolutely. So let's go on that hopeful track. Let's say that the weather is perfect. It's beautiful, cloudless. You know, let's talk about in the path of totality first. Okay. What are we going to see happen? What would happen around you? Like, does it just get dark? Like, what's going to happen?
It's super cool, and it's a truly just like unforgettable experience. So you can start seeing effects well before actual totality. So as I think kind of like as the sun gets to be about 80% covered by the moon, it'll start to get dark. And it's an interesting type of darkness too, because all color kind of takes on like a grayish hue. So it's almost like color is kind of like taken out. But yeah, and animals will start to kind of get a little confused, like, oh, dusk came early. And so, like, you know, insects might start to chirp, they might start to behave a little bit strangely. As you start getting like more and more of the sun is covered, when there's just a sliver, you might be able to see these things called shadow bands. And it's really kind of like a shadowy like ripple across, like a lot of people put out like white paper on the ground so they can see it more clearly. These aren't really fully quite physically understood, but the thought is that you have this really focused sliver of light coming from the sun. And so that interacts in interesting ways with the turbulence of the atmosphere, and it kind of makes these wavy bands.
Oh, neat.
That doesn't last for very long. Kind of, you have to be paying attention to really see those. Then, like right before totality hits, you will see these things called, they're Bailey's beads. It's also called the diamond ring. And this is super cool. So this happens because the moon is not a cue ball. It's not perfectly smooth. It has craters, mountains, things like that. So all that kind of rough edge on the moon, it lets in some of the sunlight as it's almost at totality. And it really kind of makes this diamond ring shape. So like you can still kind of see some light around like the other side of the moon. And then the other side has like the sparkly kind of light.
Wow, this is so magical. Really,
it is magical, and only lasts for a split second, because right after that you have totality. And at this point, you can see something called the solar corona. It is the really hot and diffuse outer atmosphere of the sun. Mm-hmm. This is not, like, you'll be able to see it from the ground without any sort of telescope or anything. So this is not an artifact of the eclipse. It's always there. It's just not something that we can ever see because the disk of the sun is so bright. And the solar corona is not something that we understand super well. So it's something that solar scientists still study a lot. That's one thing you'll be able to see. But if you can manage to like tear your eyes away from that, the sky will be dark, like nighttime. So you will see stars and planets. I think Venus and Jupiter are kind of on either side of Wow. the eclipse this year. So those will be extremely, extremely noticeable. It seems like night, but there's like something different about it.
Yeah.
And then after that 3 to 4 minutes, you know, the moon keeps on moving. It never stops moving. And you might be able to see the diamond ring and Bailey's beads kind of on the other side if you're paying attention. And you might see those shadow bands again. But yeah, then after that, it kind of slowly starts to go back to normal. And it's a really, really cool experience. I saw the one in 2017 and it was surprisingly emotional, actually. Like, I didn't expect to like feel something. It's a cliche at this point, but I will use it anyway. Like, you don't view a total solar eclipse, you experience a total solar eclipse. Yeah. Like, it is kind of like a full body, full mind experience. I knew it would be cool, but I was actually really, really surprised at like how cool it was.
Wow. Oh man. What can we see here? We're talking about the capital region of New York State. We're not in the path of totality, but there's still going to be a pretty significant eclipse, right?
Yeah, this area will get like a 96, 97% partial eclipse, which is still, you know, a lot of the sun is going to be covered. So what I expect us to get, it will get dim. I think we won't get the darkness that you'll get in totality, because even that 3 to 4% of light from the sun is an awful lot of light. So I expect it to kind of feel like early evening, early dusk, I guess. Like, mm-hmm. I think you'll be able to notice it dimming, but it won't get dark. Mm-hmm. Because I think you'll notice it dimming, I do think that you might hear like the animal effects, like the insects chirping, things like that. You get the animal behavior changes before totality. So I think that we'll get that. We may get some shadow bands on the ground. I do expect it to cool down a little bit. I do expect the colors to kind of start to wash out a little bit. So there are some of these effects that I expect to see here in the capital region. But I think it will still be actually pretty cool. Important, it's never safe to look at the eclipse in the capital region. Like, since the sun is never going to be totally obscured, if you're going to look at it directly, you should always wear your eclipse glasses.
That was what I wanted to go into next. I wanted to ask about the safety, right? Like, you know, I learned about this in elementary school. Like, never look at the solar eclipse because you'll go blind. You know, what do you have to do to watch any eclipse safely?
So what is really good to have are eclipse glasses. The eclipse glasses, they should have an ISO number. And this number indicates that the filter that they're using is rated for solar viewing. So they should be safe. And so that number is ISO 12312-2. And there might be some numbers after that, but as long as they have those, your glasses are, they're ISO rated for solar viewing. Mm-hmm. And be really careful about that. I got an email blast from some of the astronomy organizations I'm a part of saying that they were just starting to see fakes out there, fake glasses. It hadn't been a problem up until maybe a week ago, but they're starting to notice it now. So it's important to kind of get those glasses from reputable vendors. Libraries have them. I know the state of New York is handing them out. Different eclipse events that are going on around the state will probably have some.
Okay, what if you do not have access to eclipse glasses? Is there still a safe way to watch the eclipse?
There's also ways to indirectly view eclipses. It's called a pinhole projector or a pinhole viewer. All this has to be is basically a hole in a piece of paper. You can make them out of cereal boxes. I do this activity with kids where we make them out of cereal boxes, but you can also just make them out of note cards. It doesn't have to be tiny. It can be like the size of a hole punch, basically. It will act as a lens and it will focus light. So if you have one and you like stand with your back towards the sun and hold the card out so the light comes through, it will project an image of the sun onto the ground or whatever you're trying to project onto. And so doing that, you can actually watch as the sun kind of becomes a crescent as the moon goes across. So that's a really safe way. There's no looking at the sun at all. Important, you don't look through the pinhole at the sun. That is not how they work. I've had people ask me that, how you work them. No. You're specifically not looking at the sun with a pinhole projector. You are standing with your back towards it and watching it on the ground. Also, if you just forget all of these things, you have no glasses and no paper, you can use your hands. You can make like a hashtag, I guess, with your fingers.
Okay.
And the space in between your fingers will also act as a pinhole projector. So that will project onto the ground. So there's a bunch of different ways that you can view this safely. No excuse.
The eclipse, what time does the eclipse happen?
It does depend on exactly where you are. So in Loudonville, where our thing will be, and this won't vary too much in the Capital District, the eclipse will start at 2:12 p.m., the maximum phase, so when the sun gets blocked out as much as it's going to, that will be 3:26 p.m. And then the eclipse will end at 4:36.
Okay. Is there anything else that you want to add about, you know, watching the eclipse or the eclipse itself or anything that you think is important?
Something I just think is interesting that I don't think gets talked about enough, and I just think it's fascinating. So like, this is the only place in the solar system that experiences an eclipse like this. So Mercury and Venus don't have any moons. Mars has a couple of moons, but they're really small. So they do eclipse the sun sometimes, but it looks more like a potato tumbling through space. Like, it doesn't block out the sun like this. And we don't really get these types of things in the outer solar system. The sun is very small. It appears very small. So we kind of have the perfect sized moon. It's the perfect, right now, perfect distance away to completely block out the sun. So it's just another benefit of actually living on Earth. We get these cool solar eclipses. Yeah. But it's also a benefit of living on Earth now, because the moon is constantly kind of spiraling away from the Earth, like a couple centimeters a year. So in about 600 million years, the moon will be too far from the Earth to ever completely block out the sun. It will always appear too small. So we'll only get annular eclipses, or these ring of fire eclipses.
Now to watch the eclipse.
The time is now. Exactly. This is like, we're in prime time right now to appreciate the moon and appreciate eclipses like this, because they are not permanent things, that they will eventually go away.
That just got way existential.
But I love this fact. I love that it just like everything. I mean, like the moon seems very permanent. Like, oh, we're always going to have the moon. It's always going to like be in this. And no, it's always, everything's always changing. And like right now is like a great time to appreciate what we can see.
It bears repeating again. If you plan to watch the eclipse, please do so safely. Head over to timesunion.com to find out more. That's it for this week. We are going to take a short spring break next week, so there will be no episode. But we'll be back the following week with more from inside the newsroom. The Eagle is a production of the Times Union. It's produced and edited by myself, Jessica Marshall, with help from the Times Union digital team and the newsroom.